The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Kiplinger Personal Finance and also Money.com. Our first article up from Money.com entitled, How to Boost Your Credit Card Approval Odds. Ever since the COVID crisis impacted the U.S. in 2020, credit card issuers have made it more difficult to be approved for new cards. In fact, they've even reduced the credit limits of some existing cardholders. But don't give up hope, as card issuers are still willing to approve new accounts under the right circumstances. What you need to know is that if you're applying for a new credit card, it's never been more important to take every possible step to maximize your chances of being approved. The steps to take to boost your credit card approval odds. Step 1. Check your credit score and only apply for cards you're qualified for. If you're new to credit or have serious problems in your credit history, then now isn't the time to apply for a premium rewards card that requires excellent credit. Instead, check your credit reports and credit score and find a suitable card for your credit profile. Thankfully, you're entitled to receive copies of your credit reports from annualcreditreport.com, and there are many free services that will show you your credit score. For example, Equifax offers a credit score monitoring service, and Experian offers a free FICA credit score. A good rule of thumb to remember, the better your credit score, the better chances you will have of being approved. Step 2. Pay down your existing credit balances. Opening up a new credit card account is essentially the same as asking for a loan. And as the old saying goes, banks only want to loan money to people who don't need it. When you have very little apparent debt, your application for new credit will be looked on more favorably. So before applying for a new credit card, you should pay off all of your existing credit card balances, or at least pay off as much as possible. About half of all American credit card users avoid interest charges by paying their statement balances in full. Still, many of them would be surprised to learn that their monthly statement balances are listed on their credit reports as debt. But if you pay off your credit card balances before your statement closing date, then your credit report will show no debt, which will help your application for new credit. Just make sure to wait until a few days after your statement closes before applying for a new credit card to give time for the new balances to be reported to the major consumer credit bureaus. Paying down your balances before your statement closes may also increase your credit score, which will improve your chances of being approved for a new card. Step 3. Pay special attention to balances on other accounts from the same card issuer. Credit card issuers will be very hesitant to approve you for a new card when you already have a large outstanding balance on another one of their cards. For example, if you're applying for a new Chase credit card, then it can help your application to first pay off any balances you have with other Chase cards. Unlike paying off balances with other card issuers, you only have to wait until your payment is credited to your account, as the card issuer will see it immediately. Step 4. List all available household income on your application. In 2013, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, ruled that applicants for new credit who are 21 or older may list income from their spouse or partner so long as they have a reasonable expectation of access to it. This means that you can apply for cards using your spouse or partner's income in addition to your own. Furthermore, be sure to list all available sources of income, including child support, spousal support, government benefits, and investment income. Step 5. If you're not immediately approved for a new card, follow up immediately. While some credit card applications are immediately approved, many people will see a message saying that they should expect a decision in the mail within a few weeks. However, you shouldn't wait that long. If your application isn't approved right away, contact the card issuer to discuss the application. It may surprise you to learn that many card issuers empower their representatives to make credit decisions over the phone. In fact, the representative you speak to may even be incentivized to open new accounts, so the two of you may be on the same team, so to speak. The credit issuer will want to approve your new account so long as it can minimize its exposure to default. During the call, you can explain that you're seeking to enjoy the rewards and benefits of the new card rather than fully utilizing a new line of credit. If you have additional accounts from the same card issuer, you can offer to transfer a portion of your credit line from an existing account to the new one, or perhaps even close an unused account. That way, the card issuer isn't increasing its risk and is much more likely to approve the new account. Other times, you may simply have to answer questions over the phone regarding your income and other financial information before being approved. Step 6. If your application isn't approved, ask why. Whenever you've had an application for new credit rejected, the law says the credit card issuers and the lenders are required to let you know why. The reasons can be that you have high balances, too many accounts, too many recent inquiries, not enough income, or, of course, low credit. Sometimes there are even more mundane reasons, like listing an unrecognized address or the inability to verify your identity due to a typo or other mistake. Thankfully, some of these problems can be addressed quickly, so it's always worth it to follow up with the card issuer to ask if there's anything that you can do to be approved. What to know about boosting your credit card approval odds and credit utilization? One of the quickest ways to raise your credit score and improve your chances of being approved for a new credit card account is to reduce your credit utilization ratio. This is the amount of overall debt you have divided by the total amount of revolving credit that you've been extended. Most experts agree that it's best to have a debt-to-credit ratio of less than 30%, although a lower ratio is always better than a higher one, and there's no magic number. There are two ways to reduce your debt-to-credit ratio. First, you can pay down your debt. By reducing the amount you owe on your credit cards, this ratio will automatically shrink. But also, you can request a larger line of credit from your existing accounts. You'll be most likely to receive this if you already have a high credit score and a solid record of on-time payment. How to boost your credit card approval odds if you have bad credit. When you have bad credit, it can be a struggle to be approved for a new credit card. To start off with, you need to apply for a card that is specifically designed for people with credit problems. This can be a subprime card that will have higher interest rates and fees than other cards that are designed for those with better credit. Alternatively, you can apply for a secured card. These cards work just like other credit cards, but require the payment of a refundable deposit before your account is opened. Thankfully, you can be approved for a secured card with nearly any credit history. And in most cases, you just need to make sure that you have no outstanding delinquencies, bankruptcy, or foreclosure proceedings, and that you can verify your identity. These cards also tend to have lower rates and fees than other subprime cards. Next up, from Kiplinger Personal Finance, the three key ways you can help a child or grandchild pay for college. As college costs continue to rise, it's becoming increasingly difficult for students to pay for it themselves. The total student loan debt in the United States has risen to a staggering $1.75 trillion. This has led many parents and grandparents to want to help carry a portion of their child's or grandchild's college debt. They shouldn't jeopardize their only financial future by entering retirement with someone else's student loan debt, though. Even so, the number of adults over the age of 62 with student loan debt has reached a startling 2.4 million borrowers. If parents and grandparents plan to help on paying for college, they need to plan ahead to stay debt-free in their golden years. There are many ways that they can start planning now to help with college costs while still saving for their retirement. 529 plans offer tax advantages. 529 plans are investment accounts that can be used to pay for college for a specific beneficiary. Choosing a 529 plan also comes with tax benefits. It will grow federal tax-free, and it will not be taxed when the money is taken out. It's important to note that you can use a 529 plan from any state to help cover education expenses in any other state. However, depending on the state you live in, you may qualify for even more tax deductions with a 529 plan. There are seven states that provide a state income tax break for any contributions to a 529 plan. Arizona, Arkansas, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Montana, and Pennsylvania. There are no contribution limits for 529 plans, but there are limits for the tax deductions. These plans can be used for more than just college tuition. For example, they can help cover student loan repayment and college expenses such as books or meal plans. You can even use them to help pay for K through 12 tuition costs. While a good option, 529 plans do come with a few disadvantages. If you're looking into financial aid for college, 529 plans can work against you. You can also run into higher fees with these plans. These downfalls could be why many are hesitant to use these plans for college. Educational savings accounts are a little different than 529 plans. A Coverdell Education Savings Account, or ESA, is very similar to a 529 plan. The earnings in this account can grow tax-deferred, and withdrawals are tax-free when used for educational purposes, as they are in the 529 plan. However, the beneficiary will have to pay taxes on any distributions that exceed their qualified educational expenses. You can contribute only $2,000 per year per beneficiary. So if you exceed that amount, the rest will be taxed. While very similar, there are a few differences between an ESA and a 529 plan. Contributors must earn less than $110,000 annually. They cannot contribute to the account after the child turns 18, and the money is automatically distributed when the beneficiary turns 30. An ESA may be a better option than a 529 plan if the contributor wants to give the account over to the beneficiary as they grow. Tax-free gifts are an easy way to go. Grandparents can also simply give cash directly to either the child or parents. To avoid the federal gift tax, you can make a tax-free cash gift of up to $16,000 per recipient in 2022. This means if you give away anything less than $16,000 to an individual, you and your beneficiary do not have to report that to the IRS. If you decide to go this route, make sure you discuss the exact tuition and any college expenses with your grandchild or child, and then form a detailed plan on where exactly the money will go. This will help make sure that the money you are giving is going to college expenses, such as tuition, rather than something else. No matter if you're helping save for a family member's college expenses or saving for retirement, consulting with a financial planner should be your first step. They can help you come up with the right plan for you to save for college, retirement, and everything in between. Our next article is entitled, Why Do I Need a Trust? This article appearing in Kiplinger Personal Finance. There are some simple estate planning techniques that you can use, such as adding beneficiaries to your retirement accounts, or adding transfer on death, or TOD, designations to after-tax accounts. When you pass away, these assets will avoid probate and can be transferred directly to the listed beneficiary. Once the beneficiary receives the proceeds, they can do whatever they like with the funds. If having assets distributed outright to a beneficiary could cause potential problems, there are several reasons to think about creating a trust. Whether you're getting married or just moving in together, every couple needs to come to an understanding about how they will handle money and learn what benefits their coupledom may afford them. Conditions on distributions. If you prefer to place specific contribution conditions on the funds, you should have a trust in place. Many trust state distributions can only take place at future ages. For example, one-third of the inheritance received at age 30, one-third at age 35, and the rest at age 40. Some clauses require that the beneficiary pass a drug test or have stable employment before the trust will pay out. Trust can be especially important with second marriages, where one spouse wants to leave their assets to their kids and not their stepchildren. For example, a client with a large IRA may want to pass the account to his wife for use during her lifetime, but through a trust which ensures that the remainder of the assets go to his kids or whichever beneficiaries he has chosen prior to his passing. If he leaves the account outright to his wife, she has the ability to add whomever she chooses as beneficiary and ultimately bypass his wishes. Creditor protection. If your profession has a high probability for liability, having assets passed down in trust, once the trust becomes irrevocable, may shelter funds from being attached in a lawsuit. This can be very specific with respect to state law and the type of lawsuit, so discussing this with your attorney before making any decisions is advisable. Passing funds outside the estate. For large estates that are expected to grow even larger, creating trust during your lifetime and gifting assets can remove the growth from your estate and lower future estate taxes. If your estate is likely going to be higher than the exemption, currently at $12.06 million per person for federal estate taxes, but often much lower than that for some states, and you have more funds than you need to live on, funding an irrevocable trust now may be beneficial. Also remember, revocable or living trusts become irrevocable on your passing, so anything in the revocable trust will be out of the beneficiary's estate. Complex beneficiaries. If you have many beneficiaries in different proportions and want to specify who gets what, for example, if you have four children and you want to leave 25% to each child, but if a child passes away, their share goes to specific charities, you may need it to use a trust. Also, if you want to leave one beneficiary a specific amount, this can get complicated. Sometimes custodians will review and accept complex beneficiary requests, but they usually have to be reviewed and modified by their legal department. Minor children. Trusts are important when minor children are involved, because you are also going to require a legal guardian for the child, who may also be in charge of the funds. Since minors cannot own assets outright, you would want to make sure the funds are protected. The trust should specify your intentions for the funds and the conditions so the child, or the guardian, cannot be frivolous with the funds. If you leave the funds outright to the minor, the guardian can easily spend those funds or list their own beneficiaries. Providing for grandchildren. If your intentions is to provide for grandchildren on your passing, or you don't trust the parents to set inheritance funds aside for their kids, creating a trust for grandkids or future grandkids is an option. If you leave assets outright to their parents, there is no guarantee that the funds will trickle down. Protect against fraud or beneficiary changes. There have been multiple stories of elder abuse and fraud. Older people can be coerced or tricked into updating their beneficiaries when they are in the hospital or under hospice care. If the elderly individual is able to sign a form and their signature matches what is on file at the custodian, and they have no immediate family to catch the update, this can be a problem. Updating a beneficiary is much easier paperwork than updating an entire trust, which requires the help of an attorney. If the elderly person is not of sound mind, the attorney will be likely able to notice something is wrong and compared to submitting a beneficiary form to a custodian directly. Special needs beneficiaries. If you have beneficiaries who are incapacitated or require special care due to mental or physical disability, setting up a special needs trust may also make sense. These trusts, if set up correctly, should not interfere with government benefits or disability payments. Speak to your estate attorney about your individual situation and your intentions so they can guide you on how to protect your assets and your wishes. Our next article, appeared in Money.com, is entitled, Will Stocks Rally to Close Out 2022? Here's what history tells us. Another rough month for stocks. Here's some good news. Prices tend to get a bump around the end of the year. In fact, the stock market is now entering what historically has been its best three-month period of the calendar year, analyst at Bespoke Investment Group wrote in a note to clients on Wednesday. A boost to stocks can't come soon enough for investors. Financial markets have been struggling this year amid a series of Federal Reserve interest rate hikes aimed at lowering inflation. September, typically the worst month of the year for stocks, lived up to its reputation and has been brutal. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell into a bear market this week, joining the other two major stock indices that had already fallen more than 20% from a recent high, the S&P 500 and NASDAQ composition. The S&P 500 was trading down around 24% for the year on Friday. The good news for investors is that stocks tend to see better performance in the last 3 months of the year after suffering in September. Here's what history tells us about how stocks have traditionally performed in October, November, and December, and perhaps what this bodes for the market at the end of 2022. How stocks perform in October, November, December. Since the mid-1940s, the S&P 500 has averaged a jump of around 0.9% in October, 1.4% in November, and 1.6% in December, according to data from CFRA Research. That's compared to the index losing an average of 0.6% in September. Since 1945, the S&P 500 rose in 60% of the Octobers, 66% of the Novembers, and a whopping 77% of the Decembers, CFRA found. It's important to note that there's no guarantee the seasonal trends will hold up this year. Plus, the economy is full of uncertainty lately. The Fed has signaled its plans to continue to hike rates as much as it takes to lower inflation, a move that also typically hurts the price of financial assets like stocks, bonds, and crypto. Wall Street experts are already warning that stocks may have further to fall. Stocks rally at the end of midterm election years. The U.S. midterm elections will also be top of mind as November approaches, and not just for voters. The last 3 months of mid-year election years have historically been good ones for the stock market. Midterm years tend to see very strong end-of-year rallies, whereas the first three quarters are usually weak, Ryan Diedrich chief market analyst at Carson Group tells Money.com via an email. Let's not forget that markets hate uncertainty, and once the uncertainty of the election is over, the seasonal strength in November and December takes over. During midterm years since 1945, the S&P 500 has averaged a monthly price gain of 2.5% in October, 2.4% in November, and 1.4% in December, according to CFRA research. Therefore, history says, but does not guarantee, that we could see an extended rebound from the current downturn, CFRA's chief investment strategist Sam Stovall says. What investors should do now? Don't be fooled. The volatility investors have been feeling in the market likely isn't over. In fact, history tells us that October tends to be extra volatile for stocks. Even though timing the market can be tempting, financial advisors usually recommend not basing your investment plan on market moves like seasonal trends. Instead, they say, the best investing strategy is to focus on your goals, time horizon, and risk tolerance, and ensure you have a well-diversified portfolio that can weather volatility over the long term. And as we close out our episode today, I have a brief article of certain facts called Keeping Count, Numbers Don't Lie, especially when it comes to cash and finances. This article appeared in the Centennial Money magazine. Did you know that the average American has a credit card debt of $6,270? And that the percentage of Americans aged 18 to 29 who have some amount of retirement savings is only 62%. $564 is the annual expenditure on streaming services by the average American household. And get this, the amount spent by the federal government in 2021, $6.8 trillion. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen to us next time. I'm Larry Wilson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us, 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.